It's the JT the Brick Show, broadcasting live from the Finley Cadillac Performance Studio.
Raiders bring a blitz. He takes it off the middle, and he's wrapped up from behind. Max Crosby!
Your silver and black home to sound off for over 25 years.
Open at the 35, racing to the 20, 10, touchdown Raiders!
And now, here's JT the Brick.
JT back for number two. It's the aftermath of the Raiders' loss to the world champion Chiefs. Chiefs are 7-0, and the Chiefs deserve to be 7-0 because they're great at winning. They don't look like they have a great team this year. They should be beat. If they were playing San Francisco, Buffalo, Baltimore, you throw in a bunch of teams, I think they have a loss or two. The schedule's not easy. They've had some national games. We know that. They beat the Niners in Santa Clara. They opened up on national TV against Baltimore. They played some tough teams. Well, man, I have not been impressed. I have not been impressed, but the Raiders could have given them a beating. The Raiders could have beat them, and if the Raiders would have beat them, that really much would have been the season. We would have said, look, the Raiders aren't a playoff team, but they showed that they could win and beat Kansas City twice. They let that opportunity slip away. Sam Munson joins us every Monday from the 33rd team. Check the Mic is an outstanding podcast. Sam, let's just start with the Jets and get it out of the way on what you saw on tape, because that was a win that was supposed to be kind of easy from a personnel perspective, but that's a rivalry over the years that New England gets up for, and they know how to beat the Jets historically. What'd you see when you look back at it?
Yeah, and unfortunately for the Jets, same story really from the rest of the season. It's no one thing. It's just every aspect of the team is taking turns in costing them games. And, you know, you can point the finger at kicker Greg Zuerlein, and he's absolutely costing them points and costing them wins this season. But the fact that that game was a kicker away from being won or lost is itself a bigger problem. You know, the Jets should have been absolutely destroying a bad Patriots team, and they weren't, because every aspect of the team is just a little bit off, and it's no one thing, but when you add it all up, that's how you end up with, you know, this completely almost unprecedented loss given the dynamics of that game, you know, given what they held New England to, given what they did themselves. It's a game they should have won comfortably but didn't.
Well, you know that fans want to tank. Some fans want to tank because they're in love with this majestic pick in the third or eighth or ninth pick overall, but they want the first round pick or the high first pick because they think it's going to save the whole organization. And sometimes it does. If it's Jaden Daniels, or you get a Caleb Williams, but you could get a Ryan Leaf or a Jamarcus Russell. When you look at the Jets, not looking too far out in the future here with their cap, their personnel, I mean, do you think Davante Adams would want to come back to this? Or do you think Aaron Rodgers would want to come back to this with pride, the pride that he has, or maybe catch a chance at a better team? How's this look to you from a contract perspective?
Yeah, it's really tough to know what the future's going to look like, because they were so all in for this season that I don't think they've necessarily sort of countenanced a world where it didn't work out, you know, and that they're where they have to do something different. They've already fired Robert Saleh, the head coach. I can't imagine Joe Douglas survives a season that's going this badly, you know, unless it really does turn around. I'm not sure he's surviving, at which point it's hard to see a new person wanting to stick with this kind of collection of guys that went in for one season and it was a disaster. I think whoever comes in would want to blow it up and start over. So they're in this tough spot where right now it's in nobody's interest. It's still there to be tanking for a better draft spot in the future. But anybody that comes in is unlikely to want to just redo this season again.
Sam Munson is our guest. As I look at your Twitter, the Saints lineman that tried to rip Justin Herbert's leg clean off, that was a galvanizing moment for the Chargers and Harbaugh after the game. Even though they beat a far inferior opponent in the Saints that have a lot of injuries, the Chargers are trying to find their mojo here. Do you think they're getting it?
Yeah, I mean, I think they have been all season. They've definitely had a different attitude as a team under Jim Harbaugh than they've had previously in the last few years. They are playing with a different type of edge and with a different type of grit. And Justin Herbert over the last few weeks has been playing really, really well. It hasn't always resulted in stats or with really impressive overall team performances, but he's playing some extremely good football despite them kind of dialing back how much they've needed him this season. You know, they've been running these offensive game plans that kind of look like Michigan's offense last year, where J.J. McCarthy was barely asked to throw the ball. You know, that's what Herbert's been doing for a lot of the season, but he's now playing really well. You know, rookie Ladd McConkey, a wide receiver, had a really good game yesterday. Things are, I think, pointed in the right direction for the Chargers.
Sam Munson is our guest. So take me through the Hail Mary, the culture of the Bears, a player trash-talking the fans as the play was actually in progress. And Sam, when I went back and looked at that play a number of times, I was just fascinated about how the Bears couldn't get any pass rush. I know Washington outnumbered him, but man, that was 13 seconds where the Bears, it looked like they took oxygen breaks and said, all right, we'll try to go get him again. What'd you see? Take me from beginning to end of that play.
Yeah, I mean, obviously for Tyrique Stevenson, just a nightmare of a play for him start to finish. You know, he's at least come out and owned it afterwards and sort of apologized to fans, apologized to his team. And, you know, he needed to. It was a bad, bad mistake from him, a bad look, and made even worse by the fact that he was the guy that ends up getting a hand on the ball at the end and ends up deflecting it for the touchdown. It's a tough spot when you're trying to rush the passer on a Hail Mary like that when the quarterback is as athletic as a guy like Jaden Daniels. You're probably not going to achieve much, and the best you can hope for is to just kind of keep him honest and potentially hurry him and rush him into the throw. They really weren't able to affect him at all the way he moved around. And then, you know, it was a good enough throw. It just about got there to the 1 yard line or so, and then they got a bit of luck to bounce it into the end zone for a crazy ending to a really interesting game.
You knew and predicted there'd be some national discourse about Anthony Richardson leaving the game because he was tired. I've been doing this a long time, and I've been a fan even longer. I've never heard that before. That's usually something that's just never uttered. What does that say big picture with the Colts team that has a really good chance this year to get a wild card considering all the chaos in the AFC?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly don't think I can remember a quarterback taking themselves out of a game for a play because they were tired. I think it's definitely – we've seen quarterbacks in the past where they were – they ran around a lot and the next play had to be a run, you know, and they stayed in the game and sort of taken a play off that way. But to actually take himself out of the game, I think was a bad error in judgment from Anthony Richardson. And to an extent, I don't think it's all his fault. I think that's just naivete on his behalf. And, you know, he didn't know the kind of storm that would create and the kind of problem that would create both in the media and potentially in the locker room. And that's incumbent on somebody kind of helping him along and saying, look, this might have been okay in college, you know, where you can kind of rotate a little bit or you can just take a breather. It doesn't work in the NFL when you're expected to be the franchise. You know, Pat McAfee was tweeting about this. The quarterback is the franchise. And if the franchise is putting his hand up and saying, I need a break, I'm tired, it's just a terrible message to everybody.
Sam, the Raiders can't run the ball at all, and I thought they finally let Brock Bowers down for the first time. He had 5 targets, 5 receptions. They went almost 2 quarters without getting him the ball in a game where Kelce had 12 targets and 10 receptions. I mean, if the Raiders are thinking about running it on second or third down with Brock Bowers on the field, what are they actually thinking?
Yeah, and in particular, down in the tight red zone, you know, they picked off Mahomes with that sort of impressive defensive play where it was deflected up into the air and they got nothing for it because once they got into the tight red zone, they just ran the ball and expected they were going to be able to overpower this Kansas City defensive front. And there's zero evidence that that was ever going to work. They didn't get creative. They didn't throw the ball to the one mismatch weapon that they really have in Brock Bowers. They just tried to exert their will and run the ball down Kansas City's throat. And that really gave the Chiefs not just the ball back, but it gave them all the impetus that they made a big mistake and didn't get punished for it.
Sam, how impressive was that Bills win in Seattle? Because a lot was at stake for Seattle at home. McDermott said he can't recall that many Buffalo fans ever in that building, and he's been there in the past, and he said the Bills Mafia was incredible there. But it seemed like for the 6-2 Bills, that's a statement win. That's a pretty good team that's had some shining victories this year in the Seahawks, and the Bills just blew them out.
Yeah, it was. It was impressive. And they rode their luck a little bit early in the game. You know, the Seahawks had a couple of drives where they were deep into Buffalo territory. And then on a couple of occasions in the red zone, They screwed it up. They had a snap over Geno Smith's head, and then they had a play where they went for it on fourth and goal from the one, and Geno Smith has his foot stepped on by his own center. So two drives where they really had a chance to kind of answer and, you know, make this into a really interesting game. They just screwed it up and gave Buffalo the ball back. And then the Bills were able to keep going. They were able to take advantage of that and really get out to a lead. And unusually for a Seahawks game in Seattle, they didn't let them come back into it. They were able to keep control. I think that's the most impressive part of the game from Buffalo's point of view. Not necessarily getting the lead, but making sure the Seahawks were never able to come back into it. I think they really missed DK Metcalf. Like, he brings something to that offense that none of their other playmakers do. And they weren't able to kind of execute the offense without him there.
Wrapping up with Sam Munson. So how great was the Packers when they're 6-2, considering Minnesota doesn't look as sharp as they had the first 5 weeks? Well, how great was that for the Packers, especially to be able to run the football, have some balance there overall, and your analysis of Jordan Love, as he was watching from the sidelines at one point in that game?
Yeah, I mean, great for them. They've got Josh Jacobs really going in the backfield now. The run game was impressive. You have to be impressed by what they've done with Malik Willis at quarterback as well. For the first time, Willis had to come into the game not with, you know, a week of prep and with a custom offense that he was going to be able to run, that LaFleur had spent a week creating to try and prop him up. He just had to go in there as a relief hitter and run the regular offense, and it still looked really good. The job that he's done, I think, with Malik Willis, transforming him into a completely different quarterback than he was in Tennessee, has been really impressive. You know, Green Bay's defense is still able to make plays. The run game was on song. The offensive line is good, and the receiving core is good. So this is a really good team top to bottom.
Sam, what are you diving into on the podcast later in the week?
We're going to be doing our sort of mid-season awards, I think, on Wednesday. Take a look around the league and really start figuring out who's been the top players, who's been the top teams.
Look forward to it. Thank you, Sam. Talk to you soon.
Anytime. Take it easy.
Sam Munson, check the mic. Download the podcast. It's really good. It's really good. Remember Peter King? Bobby had a really good podcast, and then Peter took a break. I don't think Peter's going to retire forever. He's on SiriusXM. He's still doing some work, but he took a step back. And everybody should take a step back in life. In this industry, I've never taken a step back. I'm always trying to fight. You know, keep my jobs, get two jobs, keep three jobs. Some guys, when you get to Peter King's level, you can take a break. You get to Bob Costas' level, you can take a break for a couple of years and then make a couple phone calls and go, hey, MLB Network, TNT, Turner, I'd like to come and do a few games. And they go, really? You're Bob Costas? Yeah, you can come back. And I think that, you know, Peter King's podcast I listen to all the time. I used to like Bill Simmons. Not saying it's bad anymore. I don't listen to too much. I find myself when I'm listening to podcasts, I'm not a true crime guy. Okay, because those are the biggest ones. You know, the top podcasts of them all are the ones about crime. Cold cases. Someone was murdered 11 years ago in a sleepy town outside of Tacoma. And then some podcast executive found a file. And then they changed the case and got the individual out of jail. I'm not into that. I'm into, you know, some different types of comedy and fly on the wall and other things. I listen to Howard a lot, as you know. I listen to Howard a lot. But for sports, there aren't many that, you know, Looney and I do a podcast every week or two, and we try to get to sports early and then get out of sports. And that's what I'm going to do next coming up right now. Or we'll come back with it. Coming up next, I'm going to tell you a story. And I think it'll have an effect on a couple of people here after the call. I'm going to tell you a story. I don't waste a lot of time. I'm not wasting time. There's a story about my son and I. So it's important. I wanted to share that. I shared it on my other platform. I think it had an impact. I'll share it here. Tyler in Vegas on 920 AM, the actual radio station where you can listen to in your car.
Hey, JT. Hey, thanks for having me on. Really quick, I know you're about to tell the story.
Tyler, focus. Yeah. Focus. What do you got to tell me?
Right.
Go ahead.
All right. Straight to the game then. Okay. I know it was a disappointing loss. You know, it was there for the taking as basically every game but Carolina has been. But, you know, I got to give the Raiders credit. You know, they were, let's be honest, you know, that's the best team in the NFL, the Chiefs. And the Raiders, you know, they're outmatched up there. But they never stopped fighting. They went into that game ready to play, and they fought, and they, you know, even when they were down 14 at the end, they came back, and they, you know, they made it close. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, honestly, JT, when you were talking about Ritter last week, I thought you were crazy. But after this, you know.
Oh, you put Ritter in the game now. The Ritter plays.
100%.
You put Ritter. 100%. Ritter. You can make. Why make Ritter wait till the bye week? I'm going to the Miami game. I'll be out there at Miami. Why make Ritter wait and give him the bye week? He's a bleeping adult. He can have the playbook this week and be ready to go. Matter of fact, on the off day, he won't take the off day off. He'll look at the playbook. Let him play.
Absolutely, JT. Yes, yes. I just wanted to say, like, I supported them starting Gardner in the beginning of the year.
So did I.
But we've seen this and. I mean, like, it's a tough game, the NFL, you know, but, like, every game, JT, this guy goes out there and throws up on himself at least one play per game.
Right.
I mean, I know we didn't lose the turnover battle this time. It was 1-1, but that one, JT, that is a bad.
It's a brutal turnover. Tyler, I got to run you right. I don't use terms like Gardner Minshew threw up on himself. I don't use terms like that, but you did. Yeah, Gardner Minshew has some hell of a turnovers, man. So coming up next, I went to L.A. with my son. I'm going to tell you the story coming up because I'm not going to talk football the entire show. Just not. It's the World Series. The World Series mean everything to me right now, even more so. So I'll tell you a little story time coming up on my trip to L.A.
He's looking downfield. It's batted at the line, up in the air. Picked off by Merrick at the 15. Gets away from a defender. Still on his feet at the 5. It was batted up in the air at the line. Trayvon Merrick fielded the fly ball at a 12-yard return, and the Raiders set up first and goal.
Nice call by Jason Horowitz. JT, back with you as we continue on Monday. Game 3, 4, and 5 of the World Series coming up. Tonight will be an interesting night because Monday is my hell day, but it's fun. It's not hell. It's fun. It's a lot of work because I get up in the morning. We do Gannon. We have the Gannon interview, then this show. And then I drive down to the Wynn, and we're at Wynn from 4 to 7 in that gorgeous studio of SiriusXM. But tonight's one of my favorite nights because I'll have the ball game on as I'm there. So if I'm going to work and be on the radio, which isn't really work, I'm going to at least have the game on. So I want to share a story with you quickly about my son and I and the weekend we had and how amazing it was, but it wasn't. But it was incredible until it wasn't. So I find out. My buddy Brent, a good friend of mine, has got tickets to the game for me, and he invites me to get tickets to game one of the World Series. I'm not going to dive into the details of what the tickets cost. They weren't cheap, but they were amazingly fair compared to what everybody else paid for them. So I got a deal. That's the deal the Dodgers give. Not to purge onto this, but it's the price for the friends and family of the Dodgers. So I could not Venmo him the money quick enough to go. It's one of those things, like I deal with the Super Bowl every year. Buddies of mine text me, hey, man, can you get me 2 for the Super Bowl? No. Back in the day, I used to be, can I get 2 for the Super Bowl? No. And the tickets for the Super Bowl, when I started going, were like $600, $800. Now they're $4,000 base. And it's hard to get a ticket to the Super Bowl. Even if you know someone, it's hard. Well, the World Series, it was even harder for game one for a number of reasons. It's the Dodgers, the Yankees. It's in the number 2 media market. Fernando just passed away. Every Dodger fan wanted to go, and it was going to have the highest ratings. So once I knew we could get the tickets, my wife went to work. And my wife does all the tech stuff really great. So she got the hotel room. We ended up getting a round-trip flight for my son from Phoenix. He's the senior at ASU. My other son was up at Ohio State with Eddie George. And we were doing some other things, and I had to fly in from here, Vegas to Burbank to meet my son at the gate. I got in at 9. My son got in at 9:30. So picking up the pace. I get up in the morning, Bobby, and it says my boarding time on my Southwest flight. Boarding at 7:15, flights at 7:40. Okay, I figure I'm going to leave my house at 6. I get to the airport at 6:10. I got clear. I'm through the gate. I'm at the gate at 6:35 normally. No, I had a bad feeling about this. I had the tickets for the World Series. I wasn't going to chance it. So I got up at 5:30. I got ready. I got out of the house by 5:45. I'm driving in the pitch black to the airport, and I get to McCarran. Excuse me. I get to Las Vegas International Airport, and I drive to the parking lot, and it says full. Ooh. Ooh, wait a second. Full, full? Yeah. So I go to the valet, full. So it says go to T3. So now my head's clicking, but I'm good. So I get to T3, and I get through T3, and I get there, and it says to get back to T1, you got to get on a shuttle. I go, wait a minute, I'm inside a terminal. Can't I get the? No, you got to get on the shuttle. So I come out the door, and I'm about the 20th person in line on the shuttle. Shuttle's not coming. 10 minutes, 15 minutes. All of a sudden, this little, like, ski lodge shuttle pulls up. Small shuttle. Holds about 40 people. I'm 40th. The door closes. I'm the last one on. I get on. I'm in the back row. I get there. I clear security. I get to my gate. I'm good. I land in Burbank. Everything's great in Burbank. No problem. Wait at the terminal for my son and have a cerveza in the morning. Go to a game. No problem with that. Son comes. We hug. We go out to the curb. Tom Looney, my podcast partner, and one of my best friends picks us up, kind enough to pick us up. Great part of the story. Tom Looney's a bodybuilder. Smaller guy, but he's a fitness bodybuilder. We pull up, we get in the car. We're hugging in the car. Great to see you. He puts the car in neutral, not in park. The car starts rolling forward, and the guy we're about to hit is one of the biggest bodybuilders I've ever seen. He looked like Triple H. And the guy, so Looney hits the brake, and we don't hit the guy. And the guy wanted to come through the windshield. Now, I'm like, come on, guy. We apologize. We didn't hit you. He didn't care. He wanted to go. He didn't have his calories. He didn't have his calories yet in the morning. So that's how the day started off. So we went into Hollywood. We had a great lunch, my son and Looney. And then he looks at me and he goes, hey, man, the parking lot, you know, when do you want me to get you up to the parking lot? I go, I don't know. They're going to go open up the gates at a certain time. First pitch is 5:08. So we end up getting to the bar that we went to, which was a Dodger bar. And what's cool about it is we were in the neighborhood where the Dodger fans hang out, which is two blocks away from Vin Scully entrance, the front entrance of Dodger Stadium. It's not like a mile away, right there. You could walk from the bar we were at. So we end up going there, and we get to the front gate. We're walking. We got two backpacks. We got to meet my buddy to drop our backpacks in his car for the end of the night. And they won't let us in. They said the gates don't open up till 2:08. And I look at the guy, and I go, really? He goes, yeah, it's 5:08, first pitch. I go, it's the World Series. No, we're going to open it up at 2:08. We have to sit in the baking hot sun, which is not a big deal. Then we go in, we walk. It's the biggest parking lot in the world. Like, you can put 10 Dodger stadiums in their parking lot. We hook up with my buddy Brent. We throw our bags in his car. We go in there. We get to our seats. It was like the clouds opened up and God touched us and said, you're in the lower bowl, behind home plate, about 40 rows up, under the underhang, some of the best seats I ever had. So we're there, T-shirts on, Yankee shirts, start seeing Yankee fans. I tell my son, I said, let's go to the club. We got club access. We're walking into the club. We see Rich Eisen, who comes on before us here. Rich Eisen was great. He had a Yankee shirt on. He's with the son. We took a selfie, my son and his son. It was cool. Shook hands, pleasantries. Then we go in, see some people who work for the Raiders. My boss is at the Raiders. They're there. So we're having a great day, and then my son and I lock into the seats. It looked like a scene out of a movie, Bobby. The pink clouds, the sunset coming, Brad Paisley does the anthem, and then Fernando's family comes out for the first pitch, and they line them up with the players. Earl Hershiser and Steve Yeager come out for the ceremonial first pitch, and they just put the ball down on Fernando's number. Very classy. Never seen that. Fernando's family is crying. His wife is crying. Brad Paisley does the anthem. One of the coolest flyovers I've ever seen. The military jets storm over Dodger Stadium. And then the game starts. And I'm like, here we go with my son. With my son. So game starts and Cole is pitching lights out. They can't hit Cole. Cole is one inning, two innings, three innings. Right? Everything's going great. Cole pitches six innings, 88 pitches, and they take him out of the game. I looked at my son. I said, there it is. Boone's back to his normal garbage. He's taken Cole out of a game because he gave up a hit. Cole didn't even go seven innings. Fernando, in game three of the 81 World Series, gave up nine hits, seven walks, won the game, Bobby, pitched 147 pitches. Complete game. Cole comes out after six. We get into the bullpen. Fortunately, Stanton hits a home run into a bar. Hit it into the cutter bar. Like, we're looking at the ball, and I'm like, we're going to win this thing. I tell my son, we're going to win this. So we're sitting there having a great time. Seventh inning. Eighth inning. Ninth inning. Yankees are up. You know, they tie it up. We go to extra innings. Excuse me. We get to extra innings. The Yankees score. The Dodgers are making these unbelievable plays in the infield. Their shortstop's amazing. Soto lets a ball go over his head at one point from Ohtani. How could you let a ball go over your head? You should be standing at the wall to begin with. Ohtani's up. And finally, the Yankees are about to win the game, and they put Nestor Cortez in, who hasn't pitched in 33 days, instead of Tim Hill, the sidewinding lefty who was unhittable and pitched really well in the postseason. I looked at my son. I said, I don't like this. So Verdugo makes a catch against Ohtani, and he goes flying into the crowd. Catches it. Ohtani's out. There's two outs. Runners advance to second and third. Mookie's up. I look at my son. I go, you got to walk him. Got to walk him. They walk Mookie. Because Mookie's going to win the game. He's so good. He's so good. He's going to get a base hit. The game's over. They walk Mookie. And here comes Freddie Freeman. Now, Freddie Freeman's a nice guy. He had a child who was ill. He's a great player. But he's injured. He's injured. And I got to feel like you can't throw the ball in the dirt. If you throw a breaking ball in the dirt, that could be trouble. But you got to pitch Freeman smart. You can't give him juice down the middle of the plate. They do, and this is what happens.
Cortez delivers. Freeman hits the ball to right field. She is gone! Gibby! Meet Freddie! Game one of the World Series!
Dodgers radio on the call, so we lose the game. I'm a Yankee fan. We lose the game. So I don't recall being in a state of shock often. You don't want to be in a state of shock. That happens in a car accident. You fall off your bike. I've had ski accidents where for the minute there, you're like, am I okay? I was in shock. He was rounding the bases. He was at second base on his way to third. It was the loudest I've ever heard for me at a baseball game. I've been at World Series many times. I take out my phone. I get the last 20 steps of him crossing the plate. I kind of spray the crowd with the fans to look at the fans. And I put my phone away, and I sat there, my buddy Brent next to me, my Jason, my son, and I literally was in shock. A state of shock. I couldn't talk. That something came over me, and my son and I looked at each other. We had tickets to go to the World Series after party. And the plan was traffic's going to be crazy anyway. Let's just stay here and have a beverage. He's 21. We can have a beer together. And we just left. And with our buddy, we walked out to the lot. And we got in the car, and it was pretty quiet in the car. We got dropped off at our hotel over at LAX because we wanted to get a ride. Our buddy was so kind, so generous with this whole day with us. We order a pizza in the lobby to send to the room. We get room service, and my son and I are in a room together. He's in one double bed. I'm in the other. And he's like, Dad, we had a good day. We had a good day. And it was, I got pretty emotional. I was like, yeah, we did have a good day. We had a good day. I didn't feel the good day at all at that point because I was so diehard. I was so out of my mind that we lost that game. Because if the Yankees won that game, I would have walked out. Probably one of 3,000 to 4,000 Yankee fans out of the 50,000. There were Yankee fans there, but there were a lot of Dodger fans more. It wasn't like Raiders Kansas City or Raiders Pittsburgh there. And I was one out away from having the greatest all-time day with my son ever at a sporting event. Would have been, it's number one still, right? But we've been to some cool stuff. And it took my son to give me a reality check that you can have a great moment in your life, even though it turned out not the way you expected it. Now, would it have been a better day for my son and I if they won? Of course it would have been. But the day I had with my son at the restaurant for breakfast, the bar, wearing our Yankee gear, walking through the parking lot, a couple of cool Raider fans humbly recognized me. One Raider fan had a Raider tattoo on his neck. and a L.A. Dodger tattoo on his face. And his wife said, oh, my God, JT, he knew he'd see you today. We just didn't know where, and I'm sitting in the parking lot. So me and this guy have a great moment. We take a photo. It was really cool. And we're having just a great day until Freddie Freeman hit the Grand Slam. So in conclusion, I went to one of the greatest sporting events ever. So that'll be on my bucket list. Not many guys in sports radio will ever be able to say they were at the Dodger game when Freddie Freeman homered. I will be able to say that, and that's important to me. And I did it with my son. But they lost the game. And I've been through some gut punches. So a caller last night and someone on Twitter asked me when I was on, they said, what's the toughest losses you've ever been to? And I thought about it. I said, as a fan or my career? And in radio, the toughest loss by far is the Tuck Rule. I didn't go to the game, but I worked the game. I anchored the broadcast from Ricky's in San Leandro. When the Tuck Rule happened, I was also in a state of mild shock. Had to do a 90-minute postgame show outside Ricky's with about 1,000 fans. And it got kind of, not ugly, but it got kind of ugly. Fans were, you know, throwing things down on the ground that were cracking open. It never left me. Also, the Super Bowl, where we lost to Gruden in Tampa Bay. I anchored that broadcast in an empty stadium afterwards. And the Raiders got blown out in that game, but it hurt badly. As a fan, Luis Gonzalez got a base hit in the World Series against Mariano Rivera to beat the Yankees coming off 9-11 in 2001. That was near the top of the list until I was there for the Freddie Freeman Grand Slam. That changed my life because it was one of the only times, probably the remainder of my life, and I hope I have grandkids and I hope I live a long life, that I'll never forget the feeling of being with my son, the euphoria of having my son with me to be at a great game, to experience something that I'm so lucky, I was lucky to attend, and have a beautiful experience until one moment, one pitch, Grand Slam. The first ever walk-off Grand Slam in World Series history in well over 100 years. Why was I at the game, losing the game, of something that never happened in the history of that sport, dating back to horse and buggies? I don't know why I was chosen to be there, because I was actually chosen to be there, and I suffered one of the worst defeats of my life as a fan. I can't imagine anything worse than that, other than, you saw the Hail Mary yesterday? Imagine losing the Hail Mary in the Super Bowl. It wouldn't happen, right? Well, it could. It'd be the first time ever the Super Bowl ended on a Hail Mary. Well, I was at the World Series game that ended on a Hail Mary Grand Slam. And my son, it was good enough. My son got it. He's 21. He's a sharp kid. He got it. I didn't get it until he told me. We had a good day, Dad. It was a good game. We had a good day. We had a good day. I was like, yeah. But it took a while for that to sink in. And I don't think that's a good thing for me. It shouldn't take that long for that to sink in. I should have realized it when I was with them in the stands when it happened, but I was in a state of shock. So that hurt. And then I came home, and my son went to a different terminal Saturday. He flew home. I flew home. And I landed, and I drove out of the Las Vegas International Airport, and I had to take the shuttle over to T3 because I couldn't park. So, Bobby, the last thing to this to lighten it up is we got a problem here with our airport now. Our parking lots are too small now. So I travel a lot. I can't be going to T3 when I'm going to T1. I can't be pulling up. Is there an app that's going to tell me the garage is closed? Is there an app that's going to tell me that? Because I can't do that again, man. That was too close for comfort. And then we came home, and, you know, people on Twitter, you know, anybody can get into your mind on Twitter. And I kept saying, well, at least I'm going to go see the world champion Chiefs, and if the Raiders win. So my weekend started on Friday, and my weekend ended last night, and the Raiders lost to the Chiefs, and my Yankees lost to the Dodgers. I had a rough weekend sports-wise. I got beat. I had the bad beat all weekend. And you got to go to games. If you don't go to games, you don't know what this feels like. Anybody can be on the couch, and not a lot of people can afford sometimes or get the tickets to go. I get that. But there are too many people that want to sit on their couch and not go to a game. Took a lot for me to get up and go to that game and get those tickets, and my buddy Brent did it all, getting us there, but it took a lot out of me losing two games the way we lost, the Chiefs game and the Dodger game. Oh, I don't want to go through that again. I'd love to go see the Chiefs and the Raiders play again and the Dodgers and the Yankees, but I don't know if I could suffer that again. Mike in Jersey. Thanks for waiting, Mike. Go ahead.
Hey, JT. How are you?
Good, man. What's happening?
That was a great great reminiscence story that you had. We'll talk about the Yankees. Big fan here in New York. And, you know, I watched that game Friday night like you, but I was on my couch. You know, just three things, you know, and I agree with you 100%. That's what we're saying here in New York is the fact that Cole's got to pitch as long as you can. He has to. And Gleyber Torres has got to, you know, he's got to, they got to be alert with this team. They can't make errors and get away with it. You know, and I was listening to Boone on the post game on Yes, which is back here. And he said he didn't bring in Tim Hill because he was scared they couldn't get the double play with Ohtani.
Oh.
And my response to that is just let it rip. You know what? Just let it rip. Don't manage about the scare. And we get on him for analytics and all that stuff. So it's just crazy about that. And then watching the Raider game yesterday, watching the defense play their heart out and the offense cannot, you know, compliment them and help them out. You know, three running plays up the middle, it was disgusting. But I just want to add one thing, two things you brought up, which started to make me think. As a Raider fan, the most heartbreaking loss to me was when Derek Carr broke his leg on Christmas Eve.
I was there for that.
I felt like we were on a roll. I felt we could take the Patriots. It was fun. It was exciting. And that just deflated me on Christmas Eve. And I think the most Yankee one that destroyed that deflated me too was 95 when they lost to Seattle. Because I rooted for them since 82 with Mattingly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I felt bad for Donnie Baseball, and I knew George was going to make changes,
right,
not knowing what was ahead. But those were the two things that, you know, really brought that stuff to me.
Thanks for the call, man. I really appreciate it. You brought up another hard memory for me on Derek Carr breaking his leg to bring my other son in, who helped build this platform for me on YouTube. My son was at that game with me on Christmas Eve when Carr broke his leg, and we had to walk over the bridge to Air Bart. If you're in Oakland, you know what I'm talking about. And then we got to the airport. Remember, the Raiders won that game. They did not lose that game. Carr broke his leg. The Raiders won. We were locked to go to the playoffs, and I think we would have had a Super Bowl opportunity with a healthy Carr. And we walked to we got on Air Bart, and we went to the airport to fly home to Vegas, and no one was talking. It was the most eeriest day, night, walking out of the Coliseum after Carr broke his leg. Every single Raider fan knew the season was over, and they won the game, and they've already clinched the playoffs. And they were going to have a chance to go far, but every single Raider fan knew that it was over. And I remember how quiet it was walking with my oldest son. All right, we'll wrap it up on the other side. Thanks to everybody on our YouTube channel. Thanks for subscribing, JT the Brick YT. You get to talk in between breaks and before the show starts. Thank you for doing that. And we'll come back. I'll put a bow on this one. Q's coming up next. We need another day to talk about Kansas City tomorrow. We didn't get it all in. So we'll do that again tomorrow, and then we'll move on to Cincinnati on Wednesday on the flagship.
Because it couldn't happen to a more smug, cavalier, condescending guy. Oh, that's even low for you. Now, who else are you going to blame it on? You running out of people to fire and demote. You fired Robert Saleh. You're going to fire Oberg now, the interim coach. You've demoted Hackett. What you going to do? Demote the new offensive coordinator? Who else you going to trade for? Who else you going to bring in? Oh, we're a quarterback away. Stephen A., remember I had this conversation. I say you're under the illusion that that defense is going to be exactly what it was last year. In the history of NFL, only one team had a statistically, historically great defense, and it got better the following season. That's the 85 Bears. The 86 Bears were statistically better. Statistically, that's the greatest defense ever assembled. You're saying this Jets team was going to be better than the 86 Bears. I didn't believe it. You heard what Gottschalk said yesterday. This guy, I can chase him down. Aaron is slow. He's slow, guys. He's not what he was.
Wow, Shannon Sharp on First Take just eviscerated Aaron Rodgers. JT, back with you. Brought to you by Woodson Bourbon Whiskey. Quick story, yesterday, Eric Allen and I were on the field, and right before the game, Charles Woodson is the last thing you see at a Raider game. He does the intro, and it's incredible. And Charles is an official partner of the Raiders with Woodson Bourbon Whiskey. So Eric and I get the microphone. We do the key to the game. Eric Allen was amazing. The Chief fans were booing him. It was loud, man. They gave me the mic. I'm like, I'm here for the Bowers party. By the way, did you hear what I said? In front of 62,000 people, every one of them in their seat, which is pretty cool. I said, I'm here for the Bowers party. I got that right until they stopped throwing to him. Then they stopped throwing to him. So we're done. I wait for the team to get introduced. I come out of the tunnel. I walk through the bowels of the stadium. And I'm walking through, and there's one guy. You know, a big stadium underground. I'm looking. There's one guy, Charles Woodson. Hey, Charles, we quick hug. How you doing? He goes, JT, I'm going to Mark's suite. Do you know how to get there from here? You know, I'm not that sure, but yeah, we can find it together. So Charles and I bop through a door. We bop through another thing. We're in the Champions Club. One of the gals there working the elevators knows Charles. I say, take care, Charles. I say, thanks for the partnership. Charles gets in the elevator, goes to Mark Davis's suite. So he's the Hall of Famer, the Raiders icon, Charles Woodson. He's the best. Woodson Bourbon Whiskey. Starting to see it now, common-wise, but still it needs to get in more establishments. If you go to your favorite bar, tavern, establishment, make sure you ask for Woodson Bourbon Whiskey. Proud partner of our show and online at woodsonwhiskey.com. So great to see Charles. There were a lot of alumni at the game. Man, there were a lot of alumni at the game yesterday. No other team does that. Now, you might say, who cares, JT? We just want to win. No, no, no. It's important to tell you that no other team has their alumni at the games at the level of the Raiders. It's crazy. So we didn't get to everything. Antonio Pierce, clock management, timeouts. What are we doing at the end of the half to start the third quarter? That was a really big pet peeve for me. Really big pet peeve for me is the fact that the Raiders did not want to score at the end of the first half. You're a 2-5 football team. Excuse me. You need to take some chances. You're playing Kansas City twice a year. They're the world champs. So don't pack it in. I felt like they packed it in to end the first half. Kansas City got three. They didn't get seven. You can't look at that as a moral victory. We're the Raiders, man. We don't look at moral victories of holding a team to a field goal when the Raiders didn't want to score and went out of their way not to score. Then why'd we sign Gardner Minshew at the end of the first half? We can't go down the field and score or get Carlson in a field goal range. Are we that concerned that we're going to turn it over and give it to the Chiefs? Yeah, I guess we are, because they shut it down there. I don't like that. I don't think they needed to do that. And I think that's fair criticism while being respectful. What are we supposed to do here? We're here to watch television games, television shows, or go to games and report on it. And I just thought that yesterday the Raiders did not play to win the game going into the half and coming out in the third quarter. I just think they played to manage the game and hope that the big bad wolf, the big bad Kansas City, didn't come in and steal more points. Yeah, that's smart if you're in the playoff race. The Raiders aren't in the playoff race. So you got to act a little bit differently. You got to act like you can win the game and you're not scared to win the game. Otani's expected to play tonight with that shoulder injury. I'm happy for that because I want all teams to be at full strength. I don't know how he's going to play. It looked like the injury was pretty serious. Seeking their eighth title and second in 5 years, the Dodgers are up 2-0. Walker Buehler will start game three for L.A. against Clark Schmidt for the Yankees. You know, we're not talking about Whitey Ford or Andy Pettit here or Roger Clemens for the Yankees. Clark Schmidt's a good player, but he is not an elite player. If the Yankees win this game tonight, they're back in the series. Because at any point, Judge can wake up. And Aaron Judge is such a good man. He's getting so much heat. Rightfully so. He's very much struggling. But I hope tonight he breaks out of it. So I'm going to watch that game. Wednesday, we interview the coach and we do Raiders Rundown. All the Raiders Rundowns are up at Raiders.com and the Raiders YouTube page. Real proud of that show because it's a really slick podcast of what we do here every day. Thanks to Bobby for putting the show together, as always. No guest today, right? Oh, we had Sam Munson. Yeah, that was a nice show. 2 hours. Hey, Q's coming up. He does 3 hours coming off a loss. That is not easy to do. And then he does another 4 or 5 hours, depending on what he's doing the rest of the day. Listen to his show. Thanks to all of our proud partners. Appreciate everybody who listens. Have a great rest of the day, everybody. 4 to 7 at Wynn Resort on Mad Dog, Sirius XM Channel 82 tonight.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.